Welcome back to Get to Know Each Other, the official podcast of Ollie at WVU. I'm your host, Harry Russell. Joining us today is Ed Johnson, who is a native of West Virginia and the curator of a website all about the state of West Virginia. Ed has been very involved with Ollie, as he was the immediate past president of Ollie's board of directors and has taught several classes for the program. He has also worked at Disney World and currently teaches an Ollie class on the parades of Disney parks. Thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate you being on the podcast.
Nice to be here.
Well, you've had some involvement with Ollie. What exactly do you do for the program and everything?
I like to think I do a lot. I mean, I teach classes, typically at least one every term, which can be anywhere from 1 or 2 weeks to 6 or even more weeks. I've served as president for a couple of years. I'm still on the board of directors, even though someone else is president now. Been a volunteer. I actually became volunteer of the year a few years ago because I just do a lot of different things, come into the office, answer phones, help people get registered on those days over the telephone, both here and in Morgantown and in Charleston. I like to say almost you name it, I've done it.
That's awesome. Well, it definitely seems like you've done a lot for the program and the organization. What's your favorite part about being a part of Ollie?
Well, probably the classes. I mean, I'm a former college professor. Many of the people here are, but not by far, not all of them. Probably most are not former college people or even have a college degree, which is great. But being in a classroom, some of us are just... We really want to share our knowledge, whether other people want it or not. We want to be able to give them our knowledge and share it. I think that's a big common denominator with a lot of instructors, especially here. We have some expertise and knowledge in certain areas. We want to pass that on. I do classes, everything from Disney to mostly West Virginia type things. And it's really neat to have people kind of get enthused from what you do.
Definitely, yeah, it's awesome. And you mentioned West Virginia. I know that you are a curator of a website for West Virginia. Could you tell us a little more about that?
Yes, the website, by the way, is mh3wv.org. The MH3 comes from my hills, my heritage, my home, West Virginia. The three comes in because typically West Virginia studies was taught in the eighth grade. Instead of another type of social studies, it was always aimed specifically for West Virginia. So, and West Virginia is, and they're also starting to learn algebra. And so this is MH to the third power. MH3 to the third power is the idea. Kind of a gimmick, but I think it makes it stand out a little. But on the website, there are everything from state parks and covered bridges and national forests and history of several different kinds. Music, it's the only place that you can hear all four official West Virginia state songs. Most people only know of a couple of them. But I actually had to have one recorded by a local musician because I could not find any recordings or... even sheet music. I did find sheet music in the state archives in Charleston, but it had never been recorded before apparently, and so it's on the website. You can hear all those songs, a number of others, a little bit about dances in West Virginia, special places, everything from Helvetia to the Palace of Gold, to the New River Gorge Bridge, to the Capitol Complex and the Capitol Building. And we have a video on there of one of the former first ladies, for example, giving a tour of the governor's mansion, something that I had never been able to see before. There's just so much. I can't even come up with all of it right now. You have to go see it for yourself, my friend.
Of course. And I will link the website link in the description of this podcast for sure. So if anyone listening is interested, please check out that website. I have a question because I'm curious. I've only been in the state of West Virginia for about a year now. And I'm kind of curious as to, like, like you mentioned hidden gems, like what are some awesome hidden gems that I could go visit, you know, maybe as like a date with me and my girlfriend, or if I just want to kind of get out of Morgantown and see something kind of interesting about that represents West Virginia?
Well, of course, most people here locally want to go to Cooper's Rock, which is fine. But if you go down into Tucker County, for example, a couple of state parks, Cathedral State Park, which is a some virgin hemlock trees, one of the last little stands of virgin forest in the state, because most of the state was clear cut back in the early 1900s. Most every tree in many of the areas were gone. A lot of forest fires and stuff. So Cathedral State Park is neat. And nearby is the Fairfax Stone State Park, which does the dividing line between at the headwaters, in fact, of the North Branch of the Potomac, and divides Maryland and West Virginia at that point as well. And of course, just down the road is Blackwater Falls State Park, the falls being one of the two, probably the second most photographed place in West Virginia now, one of the historic West Virginia state parks. And a little further down, you've got Canaan Valley, which is a ski resort and summer recreation as well. That whole area there, including Dolly Sods and the Canaan Valley, are very rich in natural resources, history, and very unique types of geography, if you will. A lot of rocks and so forth that you don't find in much of the state. It's very, very high in that area. Other places such as, there's so many. Babcock State Park, for example, and towards Fayetteville and Beckley, has the grist mill, which is probably the most photographed place in West Virginia, because it is beautiful, especially in the fall. I believe they even have a live camera that updates every few minutes to on the mill. Oh, my friend, you've given me so many. There's so many places to go. Most people love to go to the New River Gorge and see the bridge, which is an incredible operation, as well as a lot of things in that area. Some very nice, whitewater rafting is very big there, and so forth.
I have to do that drive whenever I go back home in Virginia. I literally drive across the New River Gorge every time.
Well, I hope you, if you look down, of course, you'll see the old road that used to take you snake down each side of the gorge down to the lower level where there are the railroad tracks. And that is with a really old bridge. And that was the way it would take you 40, 50 minutes, most of an hour to get from one side to the other. And now you can do it in 40 seconds.
I did not know that.
And that, of course, is the bridge that they jump off typically every October. With the parachutes and zip lining and rappelling off of the bridge. Only day of the year that's done. Let me see, what else? Other places to go?
One place I am familiar with West Virginia is, being from Southwest Virginia, mm-hmm. I go across the border, and me and my family have gone to Pipestem a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've fallen in love with that place. We used to go up there for Christmas, and we would rent a cabin every Christmas, and you were so close to nature there.
Well, most of West Virginia is that way. We've got some cities, you know, Morgantown being one, Charleston being another, the far eastern panhandle, the two counties over there, Berkeley and Morgan and Jefferson, for example. Berkeley and Jefferson. Most of West Virginia is still pretty, pretty rural. I mean, our biggest town, Charleston, is just a little less than 50,000 people now. In the whole state, there's only 1.8 million people. That makes us one of the smaller states, both geographically and population-wise in the country. And we certainly have one of the most unique shapes of any state in the country, especially at least those without a sea coast.
Being up in Morgantown, I never fail to see a West Virginia sticker that has the outline of the state with a big WVU on the on a car.
Well, yeah, and you see a lot of them with the word home. I mean, I've mentioned most of every song about West Virginia, including all four official songs. Home is a big theme that we have in those songs. I've always thought that when you came through the New River, or the East River Mountain down in Bluefield, came through Interstate 77 from Virginia into West Virginia, where the sign says, "Welcome to wild, wonderful West Virginia." It really should say, "Welcome home, y'all," because we have so many people that have moved out of state, and a lot of them down Interstate 77 to the Carolinas. And so they come back home. And most former West Virginians seem to want to come home. Unfortunately, we just don't have the opportunities that we could or should have, in my view, for the young folks.
Definitely something I hope changes in the future, because that was honestly a big reason why I chose to come to West Virginia to continue my education, was because, you know, I love growing up in Virginia. You know, I grew up in Roanoke, which is in Southwest Virginia, and I just love the area. And then when I was deciding on where I wanted to go, West Virginia kind of just, it reminded me, like you said, of home. And it's a very welcoming place. You know, you have a bunch of things to do. Everyone's looking out for each other. And I, just being here, I've fallen in love with the state. I hope to continue my education here. I don't want to really be anywhere else. And I would love to remain having ties to West Virginia, because it is like a second home to me. And I honestly, and maybe in the future, it could be my permanent home. I could definitely see myself being here. So I like how you said out, home is definitely what a way to describe the state of West Virginia.
Well, it sounds to me that you may not be a West Virginian by birth, but you're becoming a West Virginian by choice. Mm-hmm. And that is also a lot of things. I mean, we had back in the 60s and 70s, we had a lot of folks come from the metropolitan areas. They wanted to, quote, get back to the land. Some almost called them hippies that wanted to live off the grid. And they found West Virginia to be a welcoming place. A big part of our arts and crafts heritage is from the folks who moved in from out of state at the time. And we're seeing a little of that now. People wanting to get out of the big cities. I mean, right now we've got the coronavirus going on, and people are wanting to move into a less crowded area where things are a little more safe in many ways. We're starting to see another migration into West Virginia in that way. Not the whole state, unfortunately, but certainly the eastern part of the state into West Virginia. Interstate 68 has made us very accessible up here. Interstate 64 and brings people in from the east into West Virginia, Charleston, Beckley, Bluefield, so forth. And the new Corridor H, which is going from Buchanan through past Elkins, past Blackwater Falls State Park, and then on to past Moorefield, and then on into Virginia, that will connect with Interstate 66, which is then a very straight shot right into D.C. So we're going to see a lot more of that happening, I think. Things that are holding us up right now, things like broadband. We don't have broadband all over the state. Many places, they hardly have internet at all, even a dial-up type of system. So hopefully that will change in the future as well.
I definitely think it will too. I mean, especially like you said, you know, a lot of people are moving and stuff because of COVID, and you might see some schools go back to being online, but you know, it's really hard for, you know, students and kids to learn from online because of the broadband issue. So absolutely. I think it's definitely going to be a push for that to really be priority in this next coming years.
Absolutely. I mean, right now, literally as we're talking, WVU students are moving back into town. It is becoming a crazy place to drive again. This is a wonderful town to be in when the WVU is not in session. You can get from one side of town to the other with hardly any, even stopping at stoplights. And, you know, you don't have to worry about freshmen who have no idea where they're going in town and they stop dead. And no, we won't go into that. But it is quite a operation that's going on right now. And the question is, are we going to be able to still have in-person classes in the future? The PRT is not running because of space considerations. You can't do much social distancing in a little PRT car. And so as I always have said, may you live in interesting times. And we certainly are these days.
We definitely are, but all we can do is power through it.
Well, that's what we're trying to do.
Well, you mentioned, and again, this is a topic that I have recently got really into, and I'm sure you can give me and the listeners loads of information about, is Disney. You said you taught some classes about Disney for Ollie?
For Ollie, and I have been teaching a few classes. A few years ago, I did one actually on Walt Disney World, went into depth on what's there and showed everything from Google Maps to actually pictures of many of the attractions and rides and such that they have down there. I worked at Disney in the early 90s for 4 years. I actually, much of the time I was on the telephone in a call center. If you called 1-407-W-DISNEY, I was one of the guys on the other end of the line. I was there to answer questions, but also to sell hotel rooms. I was kind of a salesman. But while I was there at Disney, I got to do some other things. I became a Disney trainer. So I was training people in the call center, for example. I was involved with one of the interesting things was Notre Dame was coming down to Central Florida to play, I believe it was University of Florida. And so there was a big game going on down there. And many of the people were staying in Walt Disney World. I would receive the fax. Remember, this was the early 90s. We didn't have much in the way of internet then. But I would receive a fax every day from a travel agency in, Terre Haute? Anyway, from the Notre Dame area, and I would make reservations, type them into our computer system and so forth, and send them back so they would have reservation numbers and know that they had a hotel room. I got to make a reservation for Regis Philbin and Ara Parseghian, among others. So that's kind of a fun thing that happened down there. But I did a lot of different things. I was involved with a little bit with the opening of Euro Disney, which is now called Disneyland Paris, and a number of other things that were involved. At the beginning of the cruise line, the reservation system for them, I went to train them on that, the folks at the cruise line when it was just first getting started, and even the vacation club, very similar operation. So I had a fun time at Disney. It's great when you can walk into Disney World anytime you want for no charge. You know, as a cast member, you could just show your ID, walk right through the gates. Of course, the only two times you could not go were on the 4th of July and New Year's Eve. And as I would tell people, you'd have to be really stupid to want to go one of the theme parks on those days anyway. Those were like two of the most busy days in the parks.
Well, like I said, I definitely have gotten this. You said it earlier when we were talking before the interview was Disney fever. I've definitely gotten the Disney fever. You know, back in the day, I went a couple times and I enjoyed it. I remember enjoying it, but I was really little. I didn't remember a lot. And then I slowly started to realize how you can tailor a lot of your Disney vacation for adult, like different adult things. And so again, me and my girlfriend have really gotten into Disney and love to plan a trip. I mean, what time of year would you say is the best time to go to Disney?
Well, you don't want to go in the summertime. That is a horrible time to be in Florida. Hot, humid, thunderstorm every day. It is definitely not a good time to go. And of course, one of the really part of that is that you don't want to go when schools, public schools around the country are not in session. Because those are very, very busy times when families come. So, of course, the Thanksgiving week is a bad time to go. Christmas holidays, there's two or three weeks in there you do not want to be going to the theme parks. Spring break, another time. Holidays are not good times to go as far as crowds. I've always told people, and I would tell people when I was talking to them on the telephone, when I worked down there, some of the best times are in the fall prior to Thanksgiving, not again Thanksgiving week. The time between Christmas or Thanksgiving and Christmas is a wonderful time. There's two or three weeks in there, depending upon the dates of those and where they show up. But there's two or three weeks there where the parks are decorated. Everybody is happy. And as I would say, even the cast members are smiling more than normal. Other times, after Christmas holidays, the first couple of 3 weeks, maybe of January, you do have to worry because Disney is starting to do lots of marathons and half marathons through the parks and everything. especially to bring in hotel traffic and visitors during what is normally a slow season. You don't want to be there during spring break because, well, the college kids will show up, and you know how they are sometimes. They can be really crazy. So those are some good times to go.
Perfect. And what are some kind of must-dos if you go to Disney?
Oh, please. There are so many.
I know there's so many, but like if you were going for a week, like, I feel like that's usually the average vacation time is a week. What are the you need to do your first time going to Disney? Because it kind of will be like when I plan a trip and go, it will kind of be like my first time as an adult. Mm-hmm. Like I will be able to do a lot of things I wasn't able to do as a kid. So what are some like I need to do that first time going back?
Well, okay, there are four major theme parks in Florida, a couple of water parks as well. But Disney has four parks, of course, the Magic Kingdom. You have to, walk through the castle. If you're crazy, you ride Dumbo, the flying elephant. They have actually had to create a second Dumbo ride because the first one, there was always such a huge line. I always would try to ride Peter Pan's Flight, believe it or not, which always has a line. And of course, you also need to do things like the Jungle Cruise and Pirates of the Caribbean. Splash Mountain for a lot of people is a must. Of course, they're changing the theming on that before too long to Princess Tiana from the Princess and the Frog movie from a few years back. She's from New Orleans, or as they used to say down there, New Orleans.
No.
Also, the Magic, you need to see a parade, whether it's a daytime or a nighttime parade, you need to see one of those. Those are some of the biggies if you're really into it. Space Mountain is another must-see for or must-do for a lot of people. Me, I'm not a roller coaster guy, so no, I don't do those kinds of things. So just walking down Main Street, it can be a lot of fun. Sometimes I know some folks who actually go, and much of the day they're sitting in a little alcove back from Main Street drinking coffee, just watching the people go by because there are a lot of different kinds of people that come to Disney World. The Animal Kingdom is the newest one, one I'm least familiar with, but you definitely want to do Kilimanjaro safaris where you get into a Jeep type vehicle and wander, and then they take you through the zoo, if you will, the zoological park with all the animals. I mean, you get pretty close up and personal with anything from giraffes to lions and everything from Africa and Asia are there. They have a number of other things. The Everest, if you're getting into roller coasters, Disney is really getting into roller coasters now. Everest, Expedition Everest, which is another really intense type roller coaster. Of course, the new thing there is the Avatar Land, or Pandora, as they say. Based on the movie, which came out, gosh, how many years ago, and is still one of the top two or three movies as far as box office ever. Eventually, they will be, I understand, as many as five sequels that are being filmed simultaneously to round out the story, if you will. If you go to Disney's Hollywood Studios, two new things there are Pixar Place with Toy Story and Slinky Dog Dash, which is a kids type roller coaster. Lots of meet and greets with Pixar characters all over the parks, basically, for meet and greets. Before COVID, you could go up and hug and do all kinds of things. Now you just kind of wave from at least 6 feet apart. And of course, the other big thing is what some people call Star Wars Land. There are two major rides there. And if you're into Star Wars, you're going to go there, along with a new hotel that's being built where you will check in for a two or three nights visit. And you will feel like you're in a Star Wars environment. I believe they even may give you a costume to wear while you're there. And everything then is themed to Star Wars. At Epcot's going through some major changes. Of course, it's always had two different sections, one in the future world, the part with the spaceship Earth, the big ball, as people call it, and then the back portion, which is World Showcase. This was, of course, originally designed to be a permanent world's fair, where you would have companies who would showcase their new technology and such, and that was in the future world. Those pavilions were sponsored by major companies at one time. Everything from AT&T to Exxon to Nestle Foods and United Technologies and such. That is going through a major renaissance now, where they are replacing many of the original pavilions and or retheming them, including lots of Disney characters. Finding Nemo, for example, is in the Living Seas area now. Guardians of the Galaxy, again, is another intense roller coaster that I don't think either you or I would want to get on. And then the back portion with all the different countries. You will feel like you're in those countries. They are themed so well. The detailing is so good. One of the sections that certainly Disney should be very proud of, the way they're able to bring that to place. So I don't know. How's that for a quickie version of some of the things to see?
You basically gave me my whole entire trip right in a 2-minute talk right there. I mean, I can agree with you. I am not a big roller coaster fan. I want to be, but I just can't. I cannot get on a roller coaster. But I think that's something great about Disney is, unlike a lot of other amusement parks, I feel like, you know, if you're not into roller coasters, you're kind of just standing around. Whereas now, you like at Disney, if you're not into roller coasters, there's so much that you can do.
Oh, you will have no trouble finding plenty of things to do at Walt Disney World, no matter what your age. They have made an effort to appeal more to teenagers, but also adults. Like I say, you can wander around the countries. You can drink your way around World Showcase. Every country has a beer and or wine, and you can have a drink at every one of them. Usually about halfway through, people start acting obnoxious. You know they are the ones that are drinking around the world, as they would say down there. So, Epcot has always been more of an adult-type place. I think even, Harry, you mentioned earlier that you had gone there as a youngster and found it, gee, Mom, this is really boring. It's like educational. I didn't come to Disney World to be educated. Again, they've tried to hit those types of concerns, and so they are working to make it much more family-friendly, if you will.
And now when I go back, I feel like Epcot's going to be one of my favorite places to go in Disney.
I wouldn't doubt that to be the case. It was probably my favorite. I mean, there are a couple of things, for example, at the Disney Studios that I always love to go to the Voyage of the Little Mermaid, believe it or not. They have a evening show called Fantasmic there, which is the Florida version of the one in California. I wouldn't doubt that Epcot becomes your favorite as a more mature young man.
Of course. And I think what's cool about your case too is, you know, having working there in the 90s, I think you can definitely see the changes in like kind of the moves that Disney has made throughout the years, and you can see how it's kind of grown into this huge giant thing.
Oh yeah, it definitely has. Of course, my job was mostly focused on the hotels, the resorts as we called them. I was involved in, you know, helping people decide which hotel to stay at and based on where they were going to spend most of their time, which theme park, you know, what their party was, how many kids, what their ages were, what their budget was. Because as we all know, Disney is not one of the cheapest places in the world to go. So I focused on that. And when I left there, there were like maybe 17, 18 resorts. There's now closer to 30. And when we're talking hotels here, we're not talking, you know, the local Comfort Inn or anything. We're talking every hotel is at least 1,000 rooms. Several of them are more into the 3,000 to 4,000, believe it or not. And they fill them up most of the time. They know what they're doing down there.
And now the NBA is taking over down there with their bubble, and they're all staying in the Disney resorts.
Yeah, there's a couple of resorts where they're staying, and, you know, so that they don't have to mingle with the other people. And so, yeah, the Disney's, what's now called the ESPN Wide World of Sports. Of course, it was the early ABC Wide World of Sports, as those of us who have a little age on us remember. But the ESPN Wide World of Sports, both the NBA is doing all of their games there. There are several venues within that complex where you can, you know, do basketball. My understanding was also the Major League Soccer was going to do many of their games there. Don't know if that finally came to fruition at this moment or not.
Not entirely sure, but I do know the NBA is definitely there, and I know they've done a fantastic job with the whole social distancing and the whole bubble aspect of it. So they definitely know what they're doing.
Yeah, Disney's not dumb.
Well, I don't want to keep too much of your time, and I kind of want to keep this as a little preview for the listeners and members who tuned in for your classes that are going to be having that are going to be coming for this fall, this next semester. But if there's anything else you would like to say to the listeners?
Well, as far as Ollie's concerned, there's something here for everybody, as probably many of the listeners are already members. But it's great. We are one of the, at least the out of 125 or so Ollies around the country, we are at least among the bottom three as far as price and cost of becoming an Ollie member. It is very reasonable, I think. You get a whole lot for your money, if you will. Right now, it's a little frustrating not being able to see people in person, but hopefully that will, within a year or less, we'll be back to at least some face-to-face type classes. But there's something here for everybody: art, history, music. My classes are certainly very important to Ollie's success, he says, being facetious somewhat. Ollie's a great thing. It's great to get you out of the house, out of your place, and into being with other people, even if it's virtually, as we are doing now with our Zoom classes. It's great to be able to have some interaction with other people who have many of the same life experiences and many of the same ideas, and trying to learn a few things just to keep the brain going a little bit, to keep the mind active, as you say.
Education never stops. Doesn't have an age.
That's the idea.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it, and I know the listeners and members will all appreciate it as well.
It's been a pleasure, Harry. I appreciate you working with us, being as a student locally and coming to West Virginia. And it's great to have you involved with us as well.
Hey, of course. This is my home now. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Take care, buddy.
You too. Again, I would like to thank Ed for joining me on our podcast. I will link Ed's website in the description of this episode. If you'd like to be featured on our podcast, please don't hesitate to contact us at ollie@wvupod@gmail.com. The email address is in the description. We'd love to hear from you. Give us ideas for topics to talk about, sign up to be interviewed, or anything else you might be interested in. It is our goal to try and stay connected with our members and anyone else that wants to get to know more about Ollie at WVU. Thank you for tuning into our podcast, and keep an eye out for our next one in the coming weeks. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time on Get to Know Each Other.